Hello, thank you for joining us on Talk Chef, the podcast where we talk about Top Chef. I am your host, John Drake. You may know me as Top Scallop. You may also know me as Young Crudo. And I am joined, as always, by my co-host, Padding Flynn Bear. It's Nash Flynn.
Amazing.
I've been leaning too hard on the Nash, you know, puns.
Yeah.
I had to go with the Flynn one. And plus, Paddington's been in the news a lot lately.
Yeah. Doesn't he get a new movie?
Well, he's getting a new movie, and also Paddington 2 is now the highest rated movie of all time.
How is that possible?
They found an old review of Citizen Kane from when it first came out that was negative, and it bumped it down like the overall all-time rankings on Rotten Tomatoes, and Paddington 2 was number 2 in those rankings, so it is now the best reviewed film of all time.
The only time a sequel has ever done that.
Well, Godfather 2, maybe. Terminator 2. You're wrong. It happened a bunch.
But okay. I'm just classically wrong about this.
But, I mean, Paddington 2 is delightful. Have you seen any of the Paddington movies? They're pretty great. Also, I feel like you'd be a fan of Marmalade.
Like the jam?
Like the jam. Yeah, right? You like Marmalade, don't you?
I actually don't know that I've ever eaten it, which
it's basically jam, but I think it has parts of the rind in it, which is what makes it Marmalade. I think it has to have parts.
Yeah, because it's a citrus, right?
Yeah.
It's usually like orange or lemon.
Right. But yeah. Paddington's a big fan of Marmalade, so I don't know. You just seem like a Marmalade person to me.
I'm a jam person, like a jelly person, but I don't know about the citrus, because I usually just eat jelly with scones.
Well, if you come across some good-looking Marmalade, please give it a try. Let us know what you think. How are you doing this week, Nash?
Well, I feel like every week I get homework from these episodes.
Of course. That's part of the fun.
That's true. I'm good. I'm very full.
Why don't you tell us what you've eaten?
Well, tonight I made butter chicken, Indian curry, and I ate way too much of it. It was not okay. But yesterday I had the tomahawk pork chop for lunch, and then for dinner I cooked an entire turkey for some reason.
Who the fuck eats a tomahawk pork chop for lunch? Just a little light lunch. I might have 22 ounces of pork with a bone the size of a katana.
I felt very, very powerful.
This thing was massive, you guys.
Yeah, it was huge. It was just absolutely enormous. And I thought about giving it to my dog, but apparently you can't give the bone to the dog because it can splinter. So
the pork chop was your new protein of the week. How'd you prepare it?
What'd
you think of
it?
And turkey. Wow, you're doing extra credit work every week.
Yeah. Wait until you hear some of the stuff we've got on deck for this podcast, you guys, as well. The pork was good. I wasn't a pork person as a kid, so I'd never eaten anything quite like this. Like, I think I ate like ribs and stuff when I was little. It had a lot of fat on it. It was like... Yeah. Astonishing.
Yeah, I mean, pork varies widely from cut to cut about, you know, how lean it is. Like most proteins, I guess, but yeah, you can get some really fatty pork, but you know, that's flavor. With that cooked down.
It was good. Mm-hmm. It was good. I think I like the pork more than the turkey, which, you know, I'm an American, theoretically, so.
I'm not a turkey guy. Turkey, I eat it on Thanksgiving and never again for the rest of the year, pretty much. It's just...
I realized that last night, like, why people don't do that, because...
It's just, if I'm craving turkey, I'll just cook 2 chickens. It's easier and better. Or 6 Cornish game hens. Let's get fucking wild.
Yeah. Like 35 quails.
Equals 1 turkey. Think of all the crispy skin you get with all those little quails.
Teeny baby quails.
Delicious. Just drop them in the deep fryer. You can't do that with a turkey, even though I bought a turkey deep fryer for next Thanksgiving. So
I'm going to
try it out. I did, yeah. So this week we had a... Mushroom quickfire. We had Tom in the studio. Tom in the Top Chef kitchen for the mushroom quickfire. How'd that make you feel? A little nervous?
Yes, I do want to say Tom walked in that room and was like, mushrooms are the closest thing you can get to eating the earth. And just, no, you can just eat the earth.
Eat dirt. But also, why would you want to?
No one is stopping you, Tom.
Mushrooms are often described as earthy. So I think that's what he was going for. But yeah, it was an odd phrase. I had it in my notes too. I was like, not sure. Not sure this came off the way he intended, but they're working with mushrooms and Better Than Bouillon. Are you familiar with Better Than Bouillon and their products?
I actually love it. I have six jars in my house.
All right, good. I didn't want to be the only person defending them, but I was like, I'm okay with this challenge because I use that shit all the time.
Yes, same. It's better than like any of the other bouillons that I've ever used.
The cubes, like the dry seasoning cubes. Now the Better Than Bouillon stuff is great. I've never used the mushroom one though, but maybe I'll try it now that I've seen this challenge.
Yeah, I hate mushrooms. I've never used it. They have a new roasted garlic one that's really, really good, though. Ooh. This podcast is not brought to you by Better Than Bouillon.
Yeah, we have no sponsors yet. We will take them if they offer us money, but no one just offered us any money yet. But yeah, the
better I will eat anything you tell me to if you pay me money to eat it.
Now that Nash has no dietary restrictions, we're really open for business. So
let's come do it.
Get at us. But, you know, some good-looking dishes in there. I was surprised how many people served up something that looked like chicken cutlets for a mushroom challenge. People just breading and frying mushrooms all day, which was not the direction I expected. But some of them looked okay, I guess.
I do not like mushrooms, so I was like, oh, man, this quickfire is tough for me to watch. But I do find it, I did find it interesting that not a lot of people use real protein. Like, we had used a foie gras.
Yeah, Gabriel used foie gras. Yeah. And then you had Nelson using crab. Those might have been the only two, though, that actually applied a meat or a fish protein to their dish.
Yeah. I find it interesting because it wasn't like you have to do this as a vegetarian and use the mushroom in place of your protein. But people sort of just did it naturally.
Right. Yeah, Tom requested a mushroom-forward dish. He did not request a mushroom-only dish. But people seem to... I think maybe when Tom's in the kitchen, they're a little afraid to not cook within the parameters of what he's expecting. So they kind of just... followed the rules a little strictly. But, I mean, Sarah made a mushroom schnitzel that if you hadn't told me was made with mushrooms, I would have assumed it was made with pork or chicken, you know, pounded thin. So if she served that to you, you'd probably take a bite before you realized what it was, right?
Yeah, probably.
I mean, you'd eat anything Sarah served you at this point.
Okay, I was going to say, Sarah's not a good example for this.
Yeah, you're just in love with Sarah.
Oh, God. And I didn't want to be, like, the first couple of episodes, I was like, this girl and her weird fish. And today she gave us that she would, one of her life dreams is to open a boutique cannery. And I was like, oh, no.
If Nash moves to, you know, the Pacific Northwest and just starts following Sarah around, we might have a problem. But imagine I get how it. Weird she's my very life charming. Yeah. Yes. She's very charming. And, you know, her attitude is, like, infectious of this. She doesn't seem to take the competition too seriously, but then she's super serious about her food. Yeah. It's like a nice balance of she tries her best, but she never seems like frazzled like a lot of people get when they're doing this.
Right. So she sort of holds it in instead of pushing it out at people.
Right.
Which I like. Like, she even told Shota at one point that she was anxious. And he's like, oh no, am I making you anxious? And she was like, nope, I'm just anxious.
Yeah. Shota too, though. He never seems too frazzled. I feel like they were, you can't ask for a better team than that. I mean, they're two of the top people this season, and in addition to just being like two super chill, laid-back people that I want to hang out with. So I was definitely, I don't want to say I was rooting for them because they were like the heavy favorite already. They don't need my cheering on. They were going to do fine regardless. But still, I was like, that's a hell of a team right there. So what'd you think of the dishes from the quickfire? I mean, obviously nothing in your wheelhouse, but some of them looked okay. You know, I thought Gabe's taco with the bouillon tortilla was kind of a fun idea. He's really creative with his tortillas that he makes. I thought that was probably my favorite quickfire dish that I saw. But none of my, like, favorite dishes of the week came from this challenge. They all came from the elimination challenge, which is rare. You know, I've been leaning towards quickfire ones quite a bit lately, but this was not my favorite. And I do like mushrooms, but yeah, just a lot of them looked kind of similar to each other.
Yeah.
Nothing really stood out as much. Lots of brown. Lots of everyone, you know, doing fry. Poor Dawn couldn't get anywhere to cook her food.
But you know what? She pulled out. She still hit the favorite, and it wasn't like a big dramatic thing that she couldn't get access.
Right. They have to find drama where they can because everyone's pretty friendly and pretty, like, even-tempered in this season. So they made it seem like a big deal. But yeah, it worked out fine. She had a good dish. It was on the top. I'm not worried about Dawn going anywhere anytime soon. I think she's super solid. She's going to be there till the end.
And I also think one of the smartest plays of attempting in the kitchen like this. By the way, that's like totally my aesthetic. I would absolutely cook on a shrimp. On a shrimp? Yeah, you know, just you wouldn't understand. But Avishara sort of going in and being like, I'm going to worry about my mushrooms in just 1 second. I'm going to pick the right stump for my height. Genius.
It's Keebler elf logic right there. I gotta worry about where, you know, the tree I'm gonna cook in.
That's his alien persona, Daniel, just really thinking things through.
I did think it was very tenuous, the connection. Some people call Portland Stumptown, so cook on a stump, you fucking dipshits. Like, it was like, really? This is your only justification for this? I did watch that show. It was pretty good. The show Stumptown with Jake Johnson and Kobe Smulders. Pretty good show. I thought you guys were the City of Roses. You can't have all the nicknames. Pick one.
Yeah. But see, I think they were just like, what if we made the kitchen look like a forest? And people were like, how would we explain that?
Right. Stumptown. Yeah. Tenuous at best, but whatever. Yes. Throw a little extra wrinkle in the challenge. No one's going to complain. The Tom is a fun guy joke from Padma. I enjoyed that joke much more for Tom's reaction to it than for the actual joke, how he seemed to just like roll his eyes really hard. Their interactions are always very enjoyable for me.
And glasses this episode. Lots of looks.
With the David Koresh glasses, yeah. Padma looked like she was going to go get a compound and start a cult. I felt about those. I don't know what you would call them. To me, they're just aviators that don't have sunglass shades.
Yeah. Those are aviators that fuck.
I thought aviators were aviators that fuck. Am I wrong?
I mean, her glasses in this episode were aviators that fuck. So I think that drops off the rest of aviators from that list.
All right. Most of my sunglasses are aviators, but I'm also not a fashionable man, so I don't know. I don't keep up with this stuff. And then Nelson complaining about his joints again. I was like, does he have gout? What is going on? Every episode, he's like, my ankles, my knees, my shin bones.
Well, he hurt himself in the orchard. But then,
they explained that he tweaked his knee during the orchard challenge. But I was like, that was 3 weeks ago, even though it's probably 4 days ago in Top Chef time.
And I'm just kind of like, do they not have a medical team in the show? Nobody can just tape that for you?
I'm sure it was taped, but he still got to run around, you know?
Listen, come on.
They can't get him a fetcher.
Tweet every day.
That's right, we're all going to get carpal tunnel.
We are.
But can't they have an intern just fetch him his ingredients? You go get me Man of the Woods mushrooms or whatever. I think that would
just
be nice.
Just put him on wheels. Let's get him a set of Heelys and just shove him in the right direction.
Heelys could be fun. I don't. Nelson doesn't strike me as the Heely type, though. I don't think he's ever seen a Heely or worn one or would know what to do with one.
This is his moment.
You think they'd be intuitive, but you need to practice a little bit to roll around on Heelys, you know? It's a little jarring the first time you put your heel up and you start rolling. You can lose your balance very easily. It's tricky. Tom going around and tasting the food. His poker face is just unmatched. He gives you nothing when he's tasting your food, which I really appreciate because it keeps us on edge, too. And then Chris made tendies. He basically made a chicken finger with two dipping sauces. He made chicken fingers, but out of mushrooms. I was like, that's very cute. Wasn't going to win, but it was cute.
It was cute.
I like Chris. He seems whimsical sometimes, especially when you team up with Avishar. They had good energy.
That team was just beautiful.
I wanted to hang out with that team.
Yeah, so the teams were actually really, really well matched this episode.
Yeah, I don't think there was any real odd couples. You know, it seemed like everyone was getting along and had a decent idea of how their proteins would work together. So not much drama in this episode. The preview kind of tricked us. We thought this was going to be a dramatic, argument-filled episode, but they just took the three moments that could qualify as dramatic and put them in the trailer.
I feel lied to, but it's okay, because it's nice to see everybody, collaborating.
I find it strange they try so hard to sell the next episode. I feel if you watched episode 5 of Top Chef, you're going to watch episode 6, right? What are you selling? Who are you selling this to?
I don't know.
It strikes me as odd. Just, show, don't be misleading with it. We're going to watch.
Right. We want to see who Top Chef is. We're going to be here. We're not going to watch episode 1 and episode 12.
Right. Maybe at the end of episode 1, when you do the whole season preview, maybe somebody would be like, oh, I'm going to check out. This doesn't seem like it's for me. Maybe they're new to the show. But if you're watching episode 5, you're pretty much on the hook now. So you can lay off the gas a little bit.
Gabriel, just show us what Padma's going to wear next episode, and I will show up for that.
Yeah. Her outfit today, not anything crazy, but yeah, we talked about the glasses already. But
next week, the return of the bangs.
The mystery bangs are back.
Yes.
We'll have to look closely to see if they're extensions or what, but is that a thing? Bang extensions?
I don't know. Yeah. I have no idea. But I have real ones, so.
Yes, Nash has real, and they're purple now. They were blue last week.
Yeah, they're purple now.
Never say I don't notice. Gabriel wins the quickfire. He does not get immunity. Wonder if that'll come up later. But he gets 10 G's, right? Furnished
from
by better than Bouillon.
Yes.
Because it's like Bouillon, but better. Give us 10 G's better than Bouillon. We'll do this every week. I don't give a fuck. And then they bring in Dale. Dale's going to be the guest judge for this episode with his distractingly yellow shoes.
Highlighters.
Dale's a real sneakerhead, and I usually admire his shoe choices. Not this week. I was not feeling the bright yellow. Or were they foam posits? I don't know. Couldn't quite tell. They didn't close up on them, but it was distracting. And then they pair everyone up. Half the chefs draw knives with a fish on them. Half the chefs draw knives with a game protein on them. And we're doing a little surf and turf challenge.
Love it.
Love a surf and turf. And they're using more indigenous ingredients to the Pacific Northwest, which is always fun to see.
I love that, yeah.
Watch them try to adapt to some stuff maybe they haven't used a lot and honor, the original inhabitants of this land. So that was a cool challenge. I was a fan of it. I was on board right from the get-go.
Same. Same. And I love watching them sort of explore this too. And I feel like Top Chef is getting better and better about this inclusivity that comes as part of learning about food. We may never know what Alpine food is. Maybe someday it will be the feature of an episode.
We know it's not rice, and we know it's not spicy. So
those are the things we know about Alpine food. But this was sort of beautiful in a very, very quiet way, watching these tribal members sort of talk about their food and how that's part of their culture. So the quote I actually have written down is, "A child watches what you do, but that's how we've perpetuated indigenous knowledge, that our foods hear us and they see us." Beautiful. Absolutely gorgeous.
It really is, yeah. Very poignant, and something, like you said, Top Chef is embracing more and more, and it's just making it a better and more interesting show to watch because it's not just a competition now. You're kind of learning about other cultures, and they're doing their part to honor not just the cities that they're hosting in every season, but also the surrounding areas and kind of the traditions that go way back. So very happy to see that, and then I'm always game for a game challenge. You see what I did there?
I do.
The game meats, I like seeing it. It's stuff I like to eat. It's stuff I like to watch people cook. And it's always hard to find like recipes for it. So sometimes you get inspired watching the top chefs cook this stuff. Mm-hmm. I know you've got some game meats on deck for Nash's Protein. So maybe you can go back and watch this episode when the time comes.
Yeah. I mean, I have eaten bison and that was recent.
Right.
Everything else is not so much, but...
Have you ever had rabbit coated in smelt?
No, I feel like nobody has.
No, it's a brand new thing. Yeah. I do enjoy rabbit quite a bit, but yeah, I've never had it coated in smelt and then seared in a pan before.
Yeah. Well, now you can.
But I won't. Let's be honest. That seems like a lot of work.
Yeah, that's true.
I'm not going to. I cook rabbit like once every 3 years because I have to call a butcher ahead of time and, you know, they have to order it for me. And it's a pain in the butt. And I usually just end up braising it or something. But
see, I could never eat smelt. I could eat everything else, but not smelt.
Why not smelt? You don't like anchovies or like those little fishes?
So I actually have a smelt story.
Oh boy. Here we go.
Yes. So I was in Italy in 2008 with a roommate who was, we didn't jive well all the time. We visited Naples. Oh, I'm sorry. We were in Sorrento and she had been not very nice to me all day and I was poor and she was less poor than me. She wanted to go out to a fancy dinner. She was like super insistent about going out to this fancy dinner. I ordered a pizza because it was like the cheapest thing on the menu and I was moody. And she ordered in perfect Italian, just to rub it in my face, I guess, that she would like the mixed fried fish of the day. It was a big old pile of smelt. And the thing about smelt is when you cook smelt, especially in Southern Italy, you just drop that shit alive in a deep fryer. So it dies in there. And so you're not gonna be able to see this on the podcast, but just Google smelt and you'll see it was like a plate piled high of all fish like this. And she was like horrified. And I laughed for ages. So that's my smelt story, but I could never eat them.
Yeah, it's not a fish you get like a nice little fillet of. No, you're eating that motherfucker whole. So we get the teams getting ready for this challenge. So it seems like a good time to break into our categories. Get it out of the way now. Bad episode for Scallops and Crudo. They were kind of hamstrung by the challenges, being pretty specific about what ingredients they can use and should use. So I'm not surprised we didn't get any this week. We did get some in Last Chance Kitchen, but we're not counting that towards our total. So yeah, for all intents and purposes, and we have another week with no scallops and no crudo, but we'll see. They could be back in a big way. I feel like Restaurant Wars is really going to blow the doors down on that one.
I hope
so. You know, it's an easy pickup. It doesn't take a lot of time to cook. I feel like we're going to see that come out in a big way.
I feel like all of our categories are really going to see some action, Restaurant Wars.
Yeah. Yeah, this is a pretty mild episode category-wise, just because it was a very friendly, very collegial? Yes, collegial episode. And, yeah, not a very dramatic one. Kind of. The challenge was delightful, but overall not the most exciting, you know, hour of Top Chef we've had. So Scallop and Crudo, watch, we got nothing. Cliche Kitchen, Gabriel was really pulling on the heartstrings with cooking his dad's favorite mushrooms in the mushroom challenge. He's doing it for his dad. I don't know why I said pulling on the heartstrings. His dad is apparently alive. There was no indication he passed away or anything. But, you know, just leaning on that, like, father-son bond. That's kind of a reality show, Top Chef cliche thing. Trying to reference an emotional attachment to a certain ingredient or recipe to maybe win over the judges. So for Bit in the Ass, let's talk about Maria and Byron.
Yes.
Who ended up avoiding the chopping block. And actually, the judges liked their dish. The judges liked everyone's dish, though, so that's, you know, no surprise. But they seemed to really be setting them up to take a fall with the way they were editing this episode. I saw, you know, they're changing the dish up 15 minutes before plating. Maria's kind of biting her tongue about she feels like they need more of the mole verde on the plate, and Byron's trying to say, no, it was marinated in the mole verde. There's enough flavor in there. And then, you know, Maria biting her tongue ends up coming back and hurting them. They ended up on the bottom because they couldn't taste the mole enough and they wanted more of that sauce. So that's kind of a classic bit in the ass situation. What'd you have for this category?
I actually had that moment where they're in the car together and she says to Byron, we got to be honest with each other. Then she gets to a talking head and she's, teams are like 24-hour marriages. Okay, so they build up this whole, we are absolutely going to be in cahoots, and then they are not.
No, but there, you know, there was no argument. There's just, you could see the seams starting to show with their partnership a little bit. But again, they avoided the chopping block. They were up, they were on the bottom, but didn't get sent home. So bit in the ass in the sense maybe they would have been on the top and maybe they could have even won the challenge if they had followed Maria's suggestions, because they seemed to really enjoy the other aspects of the dish, but just needed more of that sauce. And then I also had Gabriel and Nelson, you know, second guessing the cooking on their fish and trying to cook new portions right before plating. I just feel like that's never worked out for anybody. And, you know, they've still had the same complaint that they had, you know, they thought the fish was overcooked and the judges agreed and they weren't able to fix it in time.
And for them to look, if you're on Top Chef and you're competing and you know you have a knee problem, before you're going to cook for 6 hours, take an Advil.
He did. He said the pills are kicking in the beginning of the episode. I don't know if it was Advil
then
or something stronger.
He's like dragging his feet. He's like, I can't stand this long. It's, you're surrounded by ice. You make it work.
I imagine it's tough. I mean, these challenges, you know, they don't take a week off between challenges. It's probably only been a couple days since he tweaked his knee in the apple orchard. So I do empathize with him a little bit. But yeah, you gotta put your game face on and grimace through the pain and get it done.
And I acknowledge that this could be an editing pressure and not necessarily, like, they filmed this probably over the full 3 hours. He probably mentioned it once and the editors were like, there it is. There's your moment. I get it. But we have to put something in this category. This is my job. You've done yours. This is mine.
It's true. Yeah. This episode was light on, you know, stuff that applied for these categories. So we're trying to, like, for not here to make friends. There was nothing that bad except poor Dawn running around the kitchen during the quickfire trying to find a spot in the wood oven to roast her mushrooms, then trying to find a spot in the fryer to fry her mushrooms, and nobody's giving her any spot, but then she still had a dish that came out looking good, so.
Right. And we have no idea how, like, we never see her actually cook anything. Somebody's like, your figs are on fire, and she was like, no, they're not. You know, she just, like, magically worked behind the scenes this one.
True, they showed Dawn's struggle to find somewhere to cook her food, never really told us where she cooked it, and then she's got a winning dish, you know, or one of the top quickfire dishes somehow. We're just left to fill in those blanks on her own. Yep.
What a queen, though. She's got just figured it out, as always.
Dawn is a competitor, obviously. I mean, she's an Olympian, so she's going to find a way to compete. Regardless.
Right. But I think I have that little moment between, it was a Gabriel and Sarah, where she's deep frying and he's, can I just throw my mushrooms in? And she was like, well, I didn't really say yes, but now your mushrooms are in there.
Yeah, it was kind of something. She was like, I'm just going to be another man. He's like, I just want to share. And she's like, oh, well, and he just throws them in. And she's like, I hope, like, your mushrooms taste like oil, she said, which, yeah, I concur. I hope his mushrooms taste like oil. But obviously they were fine because he won the quick fire. Yeah. But yeah, that definitely qualified. And then, in more of a flip to this, like, I am here to make friends. Avishar said, literally said, I didn't come here to Top Chef to make friends. But then he was like, but I have made friends. I was like, aw, it's cute. Love that. Love Avishar.
I love him. I, like, want to walk through his life with him one day. Just follow him around, like,
wake up in the morning with him, see where he goes. Yeah. Yeah, I think he's in New York because he worked at WD-50, which is in Manhattan, a restaurant I desperately wanted to go to. And then once I was, like, old enough and had enough money to actually eat there, they closed. So never got to go. Come on, Wiley. Reopen.
I hate that for you.
I hate it for me too. Yeah. So what did you have for your favorite dish this week?
Oh, to be honest, look, none of them sounded particularly good to me. I'm not a huge fish person. We know that.
It's true.
I would probably try all of them.
Okay.
But I think based on the reaction of the judges, people who theoretically know what they're talking about, I would eat the rabbit smelt.
Well, it would work for you because the smelt is almost unrecognizable as smelt in this dish. So it would just be a rabbit dish with some fishy tasting things on
it. No fear faces.
No fear faces. Yes. Yeah. And obviously it sounded like a delicious dish because the judges were all, you know, head over heels for it, including the guest judges. My favorite dish of the week was on the bottom, actually. I have Chris and Avishar's seared sturgeon with venison croquette.
Oh, yeah.
I'm a sucker for a crunchy croquette.
I would eat a croquette. Yeah. Not maybe the rest of it.
I don't know. Seared sturgeon just looked like a nice seared piece of fish. There's nothing wrong with that. There's a little sauce puree, a little jam on there.
What's with the purees? Why are we eating baby food?
Well, I think they had to use they were encouraged to use some of the berries and, you know, local indigenous ingredients. And those just tended to lend themselves to purees and sauces, I guess. Yeah. It was a little unimaginative for everyone to kind of go in the same direction, but I think it was a logical course to go. But yeah, I would have liked to see somebody take more of a chance and kind of use it in a different way.
Yeah. Which, you know, Gabriel and Nelson with the dandelion greens. I'm a sucker for dandelion.
I know. You've showed me. It's dandelion harvest day, right?
Yeah, we made dandelion wine this week.
It's not ready yet, though, so right? It's still weird. It's still fermenting?
Yeah.
How long does that go for?
Oh, I don't know, actually.
All right, well, save me a bottle when you bottle it up.
Oh, it's not going to be a lot. We'll save you, like, a shot of it.
Why did you not make more dandelion?
Because we had the kids pick it, and, you know, four-year-olds don't have a ton of attention.
That's fair. All right. So the harshest criticism, again, this is a tough one for this episode because the judges made a point of saying when they called everyone up to the judges' table, whoever goes home made a good dish. You know, you should all be proud of what you made. Nobody really fucked up here. But somebody's got to go home. Those are the rules. And it's so harsh to see that in a double elimination challenge when nobody really made any big mistakes. You got to send two people home for that. But still, the worst thing I could come up with is Gail talking about Gabriel Nelson. She said their dish had no point of view, and it tasted like they were just being really polite to each other.
Yeah.
I don't think you want your dish to taste polite. That's not like an adjective you prefer to hear when you're talking about food.
I have two for this category. Mine is also, my first one is also Gail. The sauce they claimed to have just wasn't there, but Avishar and Chris's dish. That's, I mean, it wasn't really a mean comment, but the claimed part of it is just, wow.
It's like, you think they didn't make a sauce at all? They just,
they claimed it was there, but it wasn't.
Gail, interrogating them. She's going old school, like hard-boiled detective. Right. You claim you made a sauce, but where's the evidence?
I didn't taste it. Just like beautiful wordplay, Gail. My other one was for Gabriel Nelson, came from Tom, and it was cooked too hard, which I know is like an actual thing, but it just sounds amusing.
Yeah, I think that essentially just means the pan was too hot. You know, right. Like they were trying to get that skin nice and crispy and maybe went overboard. Not necessarily overcooked the skin, but you get the little white discharge in certain fishes.
It's like fat, right? Or oil?
Yeah, coming out of the skin, coming out of the flesh, which is more just a presentation issue. I don't really think it affects the flavor at all, but it doesn't look as appetizing. You know, they said they were being nitpicky, and that's fair because that's what you got to do when everyone makes good food.
Right. And one of the other criticisms, it's not a criticism, that I highlighted from this episode was Tom sort of summarizing things. And his quote is, "All in all, the food was very good. It was the best food we've had all season. And yet he delivers it like he's absolutely disgusted."
Because he was upset. Like, he was distraught that he had to send somebody, two people home for making good food. He was in pain.
He's like looking off into the distance with just like his long stocking hat on. Just, it was the best food we had all season. Just disgruntled.
You know, I think part of Tom likes ripping into somebody too, and he's like, "I got to go another challenge, another episode, being polite to everyone because they all impressed me, sons of bitches."
What a bummer.
So hopefully next week somebody fucks up real bad. So of course, as we alluded to, Gabriel and Nelson, one of the front runners of the season, end up being eliminated, and Nelson is, "Well, at least I can rest my knees." And then Tom busts out, "Bitch, you thought?" And as you're cooking right now, motherfucker. And whoever wins is back in the competition tonight. So it's going to be Jamie, the reigning Last Chance Kitchen champion, going up against Nelson and Gabriel. And you know they're not going to show us who wins that in Last Chance Kitchen this week. We're going to have to wait until next week to find out who's actually back. But do you have any predictions about who you think's coming back from Last Chance Kitchen?
I think it's going to be Gabriel.
Yeah, because Tom judges Last Chance Kitchen and that's his boy.
I mean, there's no way. Like, it's definitely going to be Gabriel or Jamie. There's no way Nelson beats either one of them.
Part of me thinks Nelson will have a better shot in Last Chance Kitchen than he does in an actual elimination challenge because so much of his struggle comes from overthinking. And I think you can see there's certain chefs that do better in Last Chance Kitchen because they have no time to get in their own head about what they're going to make. They just have to react and cook something. And I think if Nelson sticks to the food he does well, he might be able to pull it out. Now, that doesn't mean I'm picking him. I think I'm going to go with Jamie. Just because, first of all, it's boring if we both pick the same person. And second of all, Yeah, I just like Jamie. I've come fully around on her. If you listen back to episode one, I was not a fan of hers, but I'm fully in the other direction. I'm in team Jamie. Let's go. You know, I think a lot of it will depend on the challenge, too.
Yeah. I mean, I don't want Gabriel to come back. To be honest with you, I could live with the three of them staying eliminated. I know
you're not a fan of these mid-season comebacks.
No, I don't like them because I feel like part of the problem is that it basically negates the original decisions of the show, you know? If you could go home mid-season and then just come back like an episode later, then if you win, it's, well, this has all been by luck and circumstance, not necessarily by talent.
I'm fine with Last Chance Kitchen when it's like you cook all season and then you come back at the end, because then you're actually penalized for getting eliminated early to mid-season because you have to really run the gauntlet to get back in. But like you said, if Jamie cooked once in Last Chance Kitchen and now all she has to do is win one more and she's back, it does feel a little bit like it's not a level playing field for, you know, everyone. So yeah, I agree with you, but I'm also excited just to get Chefs back. I like all these people quite a bit. I don't want anyone to go home. So who do you think's going home next week? You have a prediction for that?
Oh man. I mean, I think it depends on who comes back, but I do think Avishar is on his last legs. I love him truthfully. And I think the show will be less than when he's not around, but I feel like he's one of those people that just has struggled to maintain that consistency. And we're getting too close now with people who are consistently very good.
Right. That's fair. I think you're probably on the right track. I could see Avishar. I could see Chris. My pick is actually Byron for pretty much the same reasons you've said. His highs are high, but his lows are low. And I think at this point, you want to be putting up really high quality food every episode and every challenge if you want to last, because the level of competition is so high that you fuck up once and you're going home. And I feel like those three guys we just named are all people that can make really awesome food, but slip up too often to last. So that was episode 6 of Top Chef. Do you have any closing thoughts you wanted to get into?
Padma's bangs next week.
Padma's bangs are back next week, baby. Let's get into it. Can't wait. See who's back from Last Chance Kitchen. It's going to be awesome. And then we got one more week, theoretically, till Restaurant Wars.
So excited.
I'm hyped for that. Me too. I love Restaurant Wars. I can't wait. I was thinking, you know, what a fun bonus episode for the offseason would be is if we each picked our dream Restaurant Wars lineup, and then we can have listeners vote on who had the better Restaurant Wars team. That'll be fun, right?
I think we should actually just do a Restaurant Wars.
Just like me versus you?
Yeah.
Do we get sous chefs?
No.
Oh, fuck. All right. We'll live stream it or something.
Yeah. Let's do it.
When we're all vaccinated up, we're going to do this. All right. Well, thank you guys so much for listening. We will be back next week. Please remember to rate, review, subscribe. Do whatever you got to do to keep us in your life, because we love you. And we will see you next week. Thanks for joining us. Bye.
Bye.
She waved again. Yes.